You were ready for that?
No, it's like as if I showed up on the grid and the lights were already red and I hadn't parked at my quiz spot yet.
Whoops. Gotta be on your toes, dude.
Let's do it.
Let's go. We're back. It's the Grandstand. It's our 2023 season recap after what was an interesting year. I don't know how I would categorize this year yet. I feel like the history books are going to be really kind to Red Bull, as they should be. I mean, we can't deny that, right?
It would be hard to argue the opposite. Yes.
Hard pause there. You didn't want to say it, but no, it's one of those things where, like, I genuinely believe this. It's one of those, you're going to have to just accept it. Like, they were fucking good this year and nobody was even close. It's frustrating, but we had a lot of great battles in other parts of the series. But anyway, I'm your host F Knowles, and joined by my buddy P Money here. And I don't know what else to say about Red Bull. We've got a lot to say about them.
Unfortunately, as you know, the resident stats guy here, there's a lot to say, but also a lot to put in the. Just kind of file away and hope next year is not as bad of a domination.
I mean, I'm about to nerd out right here, but
Let's do it.
You know, like in Harry Potter, when they take memories. Did you ever? I don't know, dude. I fucking love Harry Potter.
Are you a Potterhead? Yeah.
I don't know if I call myself a Potterhead per se, but like if it's like raining out or cold or like I'm just trying to have a cozy day at home, I am. Throwing on Harry Potter for sure. I'm not trying to watch any new shit.
Yeah, no, I'm more of a Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah. I got into this debate the other day with some friends of mine. it does feel like, you know, you could either be, you're either a Potterhead or you're into trolls and dwarves.
there are dwarves in Harry Potter, aren't there? But yeah, what's your tribe or whatever school, preppy school?
I don't know. We're going down a rabbit hole here. Let's roll the intro and talk about Formula One.
A question for all of you except Romain Grosjean.
To whom it may concern, fuck you.
More ladies in the paddock? Yeah, more paddock access to some women. There's too many dudes.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that, except that he was being a pussy.
Potterheads. What the fuck, dude? How do we get down that rabbit hole? So the 2023 season has concluded. We're on to 2024, but before we get there, we've got to go through the teams. We've got to go through the season. What are we thinking about F1 this year as we go into the next season? Lots to talk about, but the biggest takeaway for us is obviously for every F1 fan, even if you don't support this team, is just how dominant Red Bull was.
Yeah. So for those of you who are getting into F1 recently, Adrian Newey to F1 is, I'm trying to find an equivalent in other sports and mainly US sports, but I don't think there is. It's kind of like Phil Jackson, but on crack. Like it's the,
that's actually a really good comparison.
Yeah, Phil Jackson, Coach MJ, and then Kobe. But Adrian Newey designed cars for Senna, Prost, Hakkinen, Alonso, Hamilton, and now Vettel, of course, 4 years with Vettel, and now Max Verstappen. And it just seems like when you have Adrian Newey on your side, you know the project is going to win. And when he gets everything together, it is wild.
Well, just to give you, just to like demonstrate the comparison, Phil Jackson has, guess how many titles?
11.
He has 11 NBA championships. Guess how many Adrian Newey has?
I think I saw, was it 20?
25.
Yeah. He has added a few. Yeah.
I mean, the 25 F1 titles to his name, it's unbelievable. And it's not even, I think what's crazy about it is that Phil Jackson, like, we want to make that, use that as our you know, comparison. Phil Jackson coached relatively at the same time with the same rules, similar players. You know, like he didn't coach. I mean, he coached the Knicks for a little bit, and that was
terrible.
I'm sorry, he didn't coach the Knicks. He was the GM of the Knicks.
That's right. Yeah, we can't use that as the direct comparison. You're right, but
yeah. Anyway, but what I'm saying is, he coached at a time when, like, you know, he went from the Bulls to then the Lakers, had success with the Lakers. The rules were the same, but Adrian Newey has done this over pretty much since the 80s to now, overseeing multiple regulation changes to cars, mm-hmm. engines, etc., and has still maintained his ability to create a dominant car. The dude fucks. Like, I mean, like, Adrian Newey fucks. Like, can we all just agree on that?
Yeah. So it's 25, and it is 12 Constructors' Championship with three different teams, and 13 Drivers' Championships, which is insane.
Right.
And coming into the new regulations in 22, we thought everything would be more equalized, that maybe teams will be closer together. And Adrian Newey was part of the ground effect era back in the 80s, or even early 80s. And he knew exactly what the dilemma of this was. And he was the only one who predicted porpoising. So that just tells you how insane this guy is. And not to take anything away from Max's insanely dominating season, but Adrian Newey deserves all the credit we can throw at him. And since none of us here are Max Verstappen, let's say, you know, we're not Max Verstappen fans per se. We respect him. So we want to just make sure people understand where this success is coming from.
That was a nice way of saying Max doesn't deserve all the credit.
He deserves a lot of credit. Don't get me wrong. I think Max for me has entered the sphere of the all-time greats. You know, after the first title, which was some people say debatable, controversial, whatever.
In the words of Toto Wolff, Michael, you cannot do that. Like,
no Mikey. Yeah, okay, it's that was controversial, but then again, so was Lewis's first title. Second title, can't really argue against it, against Leclerc in 22. And this title, I mean, he won 19 races, only lost to his teammate twice, and twice within the first five races. And he went on to win 12 times. Sorry, he went on to go on pole position 12 times this season, which for someone who's not really known for his single lap speed, you know, people say Hamilton is the best over a single lap in F1. I mean, he is the leading all-time leader in pole positions. Hamilton never came close to 12 pole positions in a season. So that just says how dominant of a car he had. And not to take away from Max, he did everything right. I don't think many drivers could have had the season he had, even given that car. I'll be honest with you. Well, he's just so at one within the Red Bull ecosystem.
It's interesting. I don't want to fuck up this quote attribution, but I do think it was Alex Albon who said, who was giving the analogy of like, if you're playing a video game and you put the settings on like the most sensitive they could be, that's how Max drives his car. Mm-hmm. So like if you've ever used a sim, for example, and you've used no assistance whatsoever, you know how difficult it is to drive. And
yeah, you're spinning every single turn.
Pretty much. And Max basically has that setting in his car. And so you combine that level of feedback and being able to get that much out of the car with a driver an Adrian Newey, who knows what the fuck he's doing, as we just described. It's a pretty lethal combination. And with all due respect to Checo, you know, I think in years past, like we're seeing the limitations of Checo to a certain extent. And I don't know if I'd necessarily give Nico Rosberg this credit. It makes me a little worried to make this comparison, but in some ways I do think Nico was a more challenging teammate than Checo has been for Max.
Oh, I would say that you can't even compare Checo and Rosberg.
You know, so it is interesting. And listen, I don't want to take away from what Max did, because Max, I think you put anybody next to Max and he still would have had an incredible season. He probably still would have won the driver's championship. You know, I'm not going to name drivers because I don't want to throw them under the bus. But,
I think even Alonso said, hey, it looks easy from the outside, but it's not easy to win back to back to back to back like Max did for a while. I think he got, you know, to 10 or was it 11? There's a reason why he broke all these records. He feels at one in the ecosystem. Red Bull exists solely for the purpose of making Max win. Perez is only there to play a support role. And honestly, Max didn't need him this year. He won the title. He scored more than double the points of P2. He won the Constructors title on his own. They could have just had one car out there. They would have won. And that's never been done before. And I've seen some of the most dominating years, and I'm a Michael Schumacher fanboy, and I never thought that his records would be broken. But as they say, records are meant to be broken, and this was a year for the books. And hopefully we won't see one for at least another 10 years, because we would like a bit closer racing at the top.
Well, you mentioned Fernando Alonso, and I think that's a good segue for kind of the next interesting thing from 2023. I've historically been a Fernando hater on this podcast.
Oh boy, have you.
If we were to bring up the archives and discuss and just, I'd actually be interested to hear some of the shit that I've said about Fernando Alonso.
Some of it completely gratuitous.
Yeah, super gratuitous.
Unwarranted.
Listen, man. At one point, it was kind of like, really, dude, just retire. Like, time's up. But
yeah, you mentioned that a few times.
He's proven me wrong, man. Like, this season, I mean, he did make a claim that I think fucked Aston Martin after Canada. You know, but I mean, he was good this year. He was very good this year, and also like a little bit more cheeky, a little bit more fun, you know, not the cringe douchebag that he's been in the past. You know, he does love playing the villain, however, and I kind of love that about him. He'll take on that role, no problem.
He's fully embraced that. Yeah, he is He is the Formula One villain, and any chance he gets to especially come out against Lewis, he'll take it.
I mean, he really just doesn't. He'll take any chance to throw Lewis under the bus. Though he did give Lewis some credit at one point this season. I can't remember exactly what
he gives Lewis credit a lot. You know, they go wheel to wheel. So when Alonso goes wheel to wheel with Lewis, it's not like going wheel to wheel against, you know, Bottas in the midfield. It is going up against arguably the greatest, or maybe top two, I'd say, greatest drivers of all time. So Alonso loves to make himself look better by battling with these guys, and we saw some amazing battles with Lewis, especially in the first half of the year when Aston Martin was really the clear number two, which was the surprise of the year. And those battles were honestly took us back to Lewis's rookie year, 2007. It was vintage racing and it was vintage Alonso. And please bring us more of this next year. I hope Aston Martin can continue to develop like this because they had a great first part of the season and then fell off, as you said.
Yeah. Yep.
And with the investment they're putting in, the infrastructure, you know, Papa Stroll, if it continues like this, they might have to kick out the Silver Spoon land, sorry. But promising things coming up and unexpected. And that was one of my favorite storylines of the year, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Aston Martin presents an interesting case. I think they were, like you said, yeah, like we've said, really strong in the beginning of the season. A lot of teams were like, where the fuck did this come from? Lawrence Stroll's put investment behind the team. But I think what I think actually really happened is that Aston Martin just didn't develop like other teams did. And, you know, I think in particular, there's, you know, a team in Papaya who just we'll get to. They just turned their entire season around. But listen, I mean, Aston Martin, I think there's talk, you know, about whether or not they can maintain that going into the future. But they finished fifth this year, you know, 280 points. They were 22 points behind McLaren. I think there's promising things ahead for this team. You know, now they're year three now of this project. Is their wind tunnel going to be up? Is their wind tunnel up?
Not yet. So their wind tunnel is under construction. Their factory in Silverstone is being basically, I think they're adding about a third extra in terms of facilities. So they're laying down foundations. So maybe don't expect incredible results right away because it is hard to do what they did last year. And also we should remember that some of the other teams underperformed, aka Mercedes and Ferrari left a huge gap behind Red Bull that Aston Martin was able to slot into. But yes, in the next few years with the new facility, the new wind tunnel, Aston Martin's here and they're here to play. They want to win. And Papa Stroll is a good businessman and he understands these things. So
I love that you call him Papa Stroll. He's like Père Noël, you know. He does kind of have a Santa Claus vibe to him a little bit.
The beard like, and everything.
In a more ruthless way, though.
Yeah, like, which is why I don't put it past him to give his son the boot if he underperforms again. I mean, obviously he started the year with two broken hands after a little incident, a little skiing incident. We can cut him some slack, but he did get a little bit of bad luck. If that happens again, though, you know, Daddy is not going to
think about it.
Business, right?
Think about it this way: had Lance scored even half the points of Fernando. They would have finished fourth this year instead of fifth.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And had they been on par, had they had two drivers who were competing at the same level, they would have been in the mix for second and third. And so that does beg the question, you know, is this the season for Lance Stroll? Like, is he going to be sitting on the curb come 2025?
Is he under pressure? Yeah, let's see.
I mean, listen, you're right, though. I think his dad would cut his ass.
Or he might choose to leave on his own. That's another rumor.
He might too. Yeah, I mean, there's been chatter that he wants to go, like, get his MBA and, like, follow. No, I'm serious. Like,
or go skiing or something. I think he's a really good skier, good tennis player. Yeah. He can play mixed doubles or something, you know.
Who knows? You know, go do whatever rich kids do. But
yeah, just have some fun. Just, you know, that could be a huge opening for a seat, like a good seat in F1.
Yeah, you know what he could do is he could go hang out with Nikita Mazepin. That could be, you know, just he go.
Be a DJ in Ibiza.
lovely. But speaking, you know, I'm very curious to see what happens. I think they showed a lot of promise, Aston Martin. I think for me, the biggest question that remains is like, is Lance Stroll going to stick around, you know, after next season? But they do have an engine supplier in Mercedes, who also has, we have a lot of questions about, and their season. I, as a Mercedes fan, as a Lewis fan, I've been left pondering, and I think you are too. Is this the end of the era of Mercedes? Yeah.
I think I've laid this out and suggested this a few times. You weren't happy with opening up that conversation, which I can understand. I've been through it myself with Ferrari. I was in denial, and then it happens. I think it's tough. I think when you're used to winning so much and then you get crushed in such a controversial way, the new rules change and you haven't created a good car. You've created a pretty bad car, bad base. And then you go again in 23 on the same basis. You're being a little stubborn, in my opinion. And I think that's what's happening in Mercedes. They're losing out a lot of engineers to the competitors as well. And the clock is ticking. I think that Mercedes can be there, but I feel like there are other teams that are an upwards trend, and that Mercedes might slip down the order even in the next few years. Just a theory.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's painful to watch, honestly. It's painful to watch. It's frustrating to watch. And I have to say, I think to a certain extent, losing James Vowles was a huge step backwards for Mercedes as a team. You know, and we'll get to Williams and what he's been able to do there as their team principal. But I think the leadership that he brought and the decision-making that he brought kind of demonstrated the limitations of Toto. As much as it pains me to say it, you know, that dust up, that famous dust up in Drive to Survive, where he flipped out on Christian. I wonder if that's a side of Toto that we don't see all that often, and that's going to come out more because they don't have the answers.
Yeah, and credit to Mercedes that even when Ferrari stopped winning, they weren't finishing in P2. It's weird because Mercedes had a terrible season. First time they don't have a win in an F1 season since in 11 years. And yet they finished P2 in the constructors, right? So it's a bit odd to say they had a horrible year behind the almighty Red Bull and still get P2. But it also shows you how good they are operationally. And if you are a Mercedes fan, that's where there's still hope, because Lewis has the motivation to go forward. George is hungry. And you never know, with a new design, they could be up there, because you know that if they are in a position to win, they usually don't mess things up. So it's not like when Ferrari went down, operationally crumbled. It's not that kind of disaster. No. It just seems like they have a huge car problem to fix.
You just use the D word when talking about Ferrari?
Yeah.
Yeah. Throw some D's on that. And it's not the D you're thinking of. but yeah, I mean, speaking of Lewis, I think Lewis wants that eighth title.
Oh, does he?
Like, I don't, if he says that he doesn't think about it, I hate to call Lewis a liar, but the motherfucker's lying.
Yeah, I honestly don't think he's ever said he didn't think about it. I think, honestly, if he won in 2021, he might have retired then.
He's very coy about it. He's like, he doesn't talk about it, but I know that it's on his mind, right? Like, if prompted, he'll be like, you know, just one day at a time, which is, you know, the right thing to say. But as a competitor, as competitive as Lewis is, there's no way he's not thinking about it. And honestly, Lewis showed moments of brilliance this year too. I mean, there were moments of frustration, obviously, but I thought they did the best they could to recover. Maybe not the best they could have, but I thought they did a decent enough job, and he did in particular, recovering points when they had no business doing so.
Yeah, pole position in Hungary. I think that showed him he still has the pace when given the equipment to be P1. I think there is an element of doubt when you stop winning all of a sudden. And like, he was used to winning so much. And even in 21, he won a lot of races. And all of a sudden, he's not winning at all. I think everyone doubts every single year. It's, can I still do this? And I think Lewis showed in 23 that he still can. He still got it. He is making a few more mistakes, but does that come with a car that's not so as easy to drive? Probably. But I believe that he still got the motivation to stay for at least a few years now. And when you see how, when he's battling with George sometimes, like, you can tell he's still the alpha dog and he still wants to beat everyone. So yeah, definitely. He would not be here if he didn't believe he would be able to win the eighth very soon.
Alpha Dog's also a really good movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I haven't, but I know. Yeah, I know of it. It's on the list.
Justin Timberlake, who's also having a comeback moment. But anyway,
speaking of comebacks, how about we talk about Ferrari?
I'm going to let you take this one. Ferrari is still really boggles my mind, man.
For all of you guys out there, guys and girls who are getting into F1, Ferrari is a historical team. It's been rough for the last 15 years, since 2008. The change of regulations in 22 came at the right time. Ferrari threw everything at it, and we had a really good car, and then we didn't develop it. We had the wrong people in place, and this year has been a year of transition, putting a new technical director, Fred Vasseur. We have two really fast drivers, promising car, but still a young team in terms of how it operates. And I think that giving it time, we will see Ferrari become a bit more of a top dog and operate more like a Mercedes does. That's what I'm hoping. Ferrari has a lot of pace, and I thought for a long time that Ferrari would have finished P2. I think they had on average the fastest car. Second fastest car, fastest in the non-Red Bull championship. 6 pole positions. You know, it's hard to get that in a Red Bull dominating year like 23. I think Charles showed that, in my opinion, he is the fastest driver single lap on the grid, hands down. Put him in any car, put him in the fastest car against any other driver, he will bang out the fastest qualifying lap. Even Lewis, I think. And he still is making a few mistakes in race conditions, but yeah, and so is his team, race engineer. It's been a rough year, but I am once again optimistic. I've been optimistic for the past 15 years, and I will never stop because that's what being a Tifosi is. It hurts, but one day we'll get there. It just wasn't in 23. And oh, I forgot. Obviously, I forgot that Ferrari won.
Lee Curtis came out right now. yeah, I heard a claimy Lee Curtis in there about Charles being the fastest one lap driver on the grid. What?
And check the archives. It's not the first time I say that, and I stand by it. And also, before, if I may, Ferrari only non Red Bull win of the year, obviously.
True. No, that brought everyone joy. Trust me, I was hooting and hollering, screaming at the TV. I was very happy for Carlos. That I think every F1 fan, unless you're Dutch or Red Bull, was happy about that. And that was actually, for me, we knew that Red Bull was going to be dominant this season. How dominant they were going to be, not clear. But I don't think anybody wanted them to win every single race. And thank God they did not. Like, thank God. So thank you, Carlos Sainz, for that. I agree with you, though. I think Ferrari shows promise. I think Fred Vasseur is the kind of person that they've needed.
Yes.
I think you saw changes to the Ferrari team. There weren't as many fuck-ups as in years past. No, seriously. No,
it's true. It's true.
There weren't. And I think Fred has a much more laid-back style. I think he doesn't put up with the bullshit at Ferrari either. Like, from my, like, just outsider, not having met the guy, but just his demeanor is like, hey guys, like, we might be Ferrari, but we haven't won shit since 2007. You know, we won some races, we've been in title competition, we've been competing for titles, but not really. I mean, let's be honest, like, those were all pretending years. And it comes down to those strategy calls, I think. And I think Fred has probably taken a look at that and said, we need to stop with this egomania that is, we are Ferrari. We, you know, everything, we're entitled to win. And I think that's coming through. That's what I think.
Yeah. Last time there was a French person in charge in Ferrari, it started a whole domination cycle. I'm not saying it'll happen, but I'm very, very interested. I love Fred Vasseur. And the thing is, I'm hoping they give him time. It's like we see in a lot of football teams when managers get sacked after a couple of years. This cannot happen at Ferrari because we need stability and we need to lay the foundations. Everything should be done in a serene and non-emotional way, please. And then results will come in.
I mean, good luck. Italians don't really do that.
Which is why there's no Italian leading the team.
Well, you mentioned Fred Vasseur as a Frenchman. There is a French team on the grid. Who they are and their identity, we're still unsure of.
Oh,
and you're like, who?
Yes.
And that is Alpine, formerly Renault.
Alpine can best be described as the team that gets overlooked the most, I think, in F1.
You think so? I think there's another team personally, but
I think you're referring to Haas, but I
how did you know?
I feel like Alpine struggles to be relevant in F1. They were previously Renault, which is a historic constructor that's given titles to Michael Schumacher, to Fernando Alonso, a huge culture of winning. And this whole Alpine rebranding for me just makes no sense.
Yeah.
And they talk about a team that has no stability, firing people in charge over the last few years. They're that team. And they're claiming they want to get P3, P4, and yet they kind of stand still and maybe went a little backwards this year. They were behind the top teams and ahead of the teams fighting at the back. They were in no man's land, and it seemed a bit lonely for them out there, which that's why, hence the whole being irrelevant for me.
I have to agree with you. The Alpine rebrand, the firing of Otmar, rough. You know, Laurent Rossi, who's the executive manager of the team, the CEO, excuse me. You know, he made a lot of claims, which I think was put his job in jeopardy from the moment he said what he said. Because then it set expectations to say that that's where we're going to meet. And again, I think to the point I was making about Ferrari, Alpine is having this issue too, where they're historically, you know, as Renault, as they were Benetton, right? They historically have been successful in F1 as far as other constructors are concerned. But that doesn't just translate year after year. And I agree with you. I don't know who this team is. Really don't.
Neither do they, honestly.
Well, and I think it's interesting because you have two drivers in Ocon and in Gasly who I think are phenomenal drivers. I think they've got a great driver lineup.
Very exciting.
Like, truly, I think Pierre and Ocon, you give those two the right car, they're going to compete for podiums and wins. But the fucking dumpster fire behind the scenes, where it's like you've got Renault management, like the global Renault being like, we need for the sake of the brand, we need to be competitive, but they're making changes without letting, like, Otmar was there for half a season.
Yeah.
And as a proven boss in Formula One, you know, I still don't understand that decision. It makes no sense to me why you would do something like that mid-season, let the season play out. Alpine, I think, other than Haas, who you mentioned, I think they're a team on the grid who needs to sort their shit out and sort it out fast. Because you're right. Like, I don't think a lot of F1 fans in general, if you were to go up to just a casual F1 fan, Alpine is not, unless you're in France, Alpine is not who you're talking, who you're gonna bring up.
Yeah, and they need to be careful about their strategy, because if they don't get significant results, and I'm just saying get going up on the grid, not winning yet, if they don't do that in the next couple of years, they're in danger of maybe selling, or I don't know. But there is also a lot of exciting things going on in Alpine. There's, you know, a whole new investors coming in from the US. So let's see. Maybe it is one of those transition periods for Alpine. And hey, maybe you and I will sit here in a couple of years and say, holy shit, Alpine's winning every race now. And they just had to sit through this period of hell. And now they're there. But as of today, I don't believe that Alpine can compete with the top three, and even with Aston Martin or McLaren, even. Especially not McLaren.
No, I mean, they clearly demonstrated last year that they're pretenders, in my opinion. You know, they were lucky that Williams, AlphaTauri, Alfa Romeo, and Haas, you know, who we'll get to, didn't have their performance. But I mean, yeah, they're just like a midfield team that shows up every now, like kind of when they want to, or I don't really know. And so I'm just looking to the future, they need to really sort out their identity. As far as I'm concerned, because I want to see them do well. I think it's important that, you know, we have three British constructors in F1. There's only one French one, and I think it's important that for the sake of the sport, that they're successful, or at least demonstrate their ability to be competitive. That's my take.
Yeah.
You're like, allez les bleus.
It's hard. I'm being French, it's hard to get excited about them, but I hope I could be soon, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, exciting lineup. Just as you said, get your shit together and let's give them some time.
But again, like, you know, what's interesting is that you look, you know, moving to other parts of the grid, you look to a team like McLaren, who started the season terribly. I mean, like, McLaren, everybody was like, what the fuck happened to McLaren? If you're a fan of F1, if you're following F1, everybody was like, oh my God, what happened to this team? I think we even said in the first few races, we thought they're going to be back markers. We thought it was back to 2017 for them.
But the thing was with McLaren last year, they came in with a car that was barely updated. They knew,
right?
They knew on the offseason, if you go back and in our archives, and I think we talked about this earlier in the year, they came in with a car that was not ready to race in 23. And they said, listen, we found a direction we want to go in, but we found it too late. So we're going to wait a few months to put in the work in the wind tunnel and get these updates out in due time. And when they did, holy shit, did they take a huge leap on the grid. They went from being, I think, P17 in Bahrain to, they were the second fastest team for a big part of the second half of the season behind Red Bull. And Oscar Piastri won a sprint race in his rookie season and got a podium. For me, one of the most exciting driver lineups with Ferrari on the grid. And we might have one of the best rookies F1 seen since Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, Oscar had won me over this year, for sure. I thought what he did with Alpine and Renault was a bit unprofessional, considering the amount of money that Renault put behind his come up. But in the end, it was the smart decision.
And he was very professional all season long.
He really was.
He managed to keep his head on his shoulders, because he probably got a lot of social media hate just commentary, which is the case these days. And he's cool headed, man, almost to a point where you think like he's a bit of an American psycho in there on his radio times. But I like the kid, man. He's fast.
Let's see Paul Allen's card.
Ooh, what font is that?
Yeah. He's getting reservations at Dorsia.
But man, I love the kid. And Lando Norris, honestly, one of the best drivers on the grid as well. He needs to win his first race. And I really hope when we get to 2024 in a few weeks, I want him to have a car to win his first race in F1 next year because it's been too long and this cannot continue. He cannot be a driver that hasn't won a Grand Prix after 24.
Oh, man. I mean, I think let's give Oscar his props. But yeah, I do want to talk about Lando. Like, how has this dude not won a Grand Prix? It's mind blowing. And here's the thing. The sprint race is a sprint race. Good for him. He won it. He won a race, in quotes. I don't really count that. It's not a full Grand Prix.
Doesn't count in the stats for sure.
No, it doesn't. And so I think to say he won his first race before Lando is kind of bullshit. No, it is bullshit. Not just kind of.
I'll tell you what though. Lando didn't like that.
Oh no, of course he didn't. And I think we're also seeing, when Lando first got into the sport, he was, we thought he was kind of this funny, goofy guy, but we're definitely seeing a more ruthless version of him as he matures into the sport. And I think it's got to be weighing on him. That team, I just have to say, McLaren was the most impressive team for me this past season. It really was.
What a turnaround.
Like Red Bull impressive for other reasons, but McLaren impressive because to start the way you did and then do what was basically a 180. It's hard to do that in a sport that is so competitive. And it says to me the future is looking very bright for them, especially with their driver lineup. I think McLaren is the most, if not the most, one of the most exciting teams in Formula One right now, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hands down, I think they've got, it's interesting because the driver market right now, each team, I think, has an incredibly competitive set of drivers. Save Aston Martin with the Stroll question and... I don't know. I don't want to throw Haas under the bus because I do love Hulk and K-Mag, but I think.
I'll tell you what, that driver lineup is better than the car they're given.
Oh, 100%.
So easily. It's not the driver's fault for sure there.
No. Absolutely not. But I think it was going to be hard for them to get a race win this year with Red Bull's dominance, but I really do think 2024 could be an exciting season for McLaren. I think they're going to compete for, I hope, but I do think they're going to be competing for a lot of podiums and race wins. That's your silence is deafening.
I mean, anything different to Red Bull, I am pumped. Alpine winning right off the bat, I'll take it. McLaren, I'll take it. Ferrari, of course. Williams, I'd love to see that. Yes.
Yeah. Please. I mean, another team that I think is definitely on the rise too. I think we both think that they're on the rise is Williams. I think Albon has been brilliant for them. He's shown what the car can do. I think he's outperformed what the car can do.
He's shown also what he can do in F1. A lot of people doubted him after he got his ass whooped by Max, let's be real, back in 2019, 2020 Bull. We thought he might not be back in Formula One. Williams was a little bit of a second chance for him, and he took it and he didn't fuck it up. He really crushed it. Any chance he got, except for Australia where he crashed, but that's the only mistake he made all season, but he scored, I think, 97% of the points at Williams next to his rookie teammate. And very impressive drives, very mature driver, really coming into his own. And I really feel like he embodies the Williams spirit historically. He's a racer at heart. He's a no bullshits guy. And yeah, doesn't flaunt anything. I think he's one of my favorite drivers on the grid and probably one of the standouts of 23.
Oh, yeah. He's also just a really nice dude. Yeah. And not a lot of ego, loves racing. Like, that to me is something you don't get a lot of in Formula One and sports in general at the highest level. So I'm really excited too for Williams. I think, I think we can see them competing maybe for fifth or sixth this year.
Yeah, I think 23 was a transition year for Williams, and now we're going to start seeing what James Bowles can really do in the next year or so. So who knows? I really hope they take a step forward. I think P7 is, I think they can definitely go up the grid this year. And if they start going at it with Alpine, then it's going to get spicy in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because now we're kind of getting to the back end of the grid as far as their place in the championship. But there's I kind of lump these three teams together right now: Haas, Alfa Romeo, and AlphaTauri. Like they almost feel like relegation teams, like. In some ways, like they're so far beyond as far as the points are. Well, I mean, Williams only finished 3 points above AlphaTauri, but I have a hard time. We talked about who's relevant in Formula One. I think AlphaTauri, because of their connection to Red Bull, maintain a certain relevance.
The junior team, yes.
Junior team. They had a really strange season too. You know, they had two replacement drivers. Three, actually. They swapped out, or Nick DeVries took over for Gasly. Mm-hmm. He didn't work out. So they brought in Danny Ric. Danny Ric breaks his hand.
What up?
Lawson comes in, has an incredible run. Like, good for that dude. Liam Lawson definitely demonstrated that he deserves a spot in Formula One. In my
flawless.
Opinion.
That was an incredible stint in there.
Really was. It really, really was. I mean, granted, he only scored 2 points, but I think he had DNF, right?
Yep.
At one point?
He had at least one DNF.
Yeah.
And one first lap DNF too. So his first couple of races were really strong, and then he had a bit of bad luck in the last race or two. I have nothing bad to say about Lawson. I think he's the real deal. He needs a seat.
Yeah.
Some of those seats in the back are going to be people are going to be fighting over those. So Lawson's definitely one to put in a racing seat in 25, or who knows? The way things go, he could swap in 24, but. Yeah, I think Yuki did a really good job. He's maturing slower than I thought and slower than I think everyone else at Red Bull thought, but he is becoming quite a fast driver as well. He fared well against all his teammates this year, beat everyone, even Danny Ric when Danny Ric came back. So interesting dynamics at AlphaTauri. Now they're clearly understanding that they're no longer a junior team. Red Bull wants to support them more. They're going to have a closer relationship with them and take more parts from the A team, which means that they're no longer going to be the team in the back. Because for a while, Red Bull had the number one team with their A team, and AlphaTauri was last for a huge part of the season until Red Bull told them to get their shit together and help them with some of the development in the end. And that's how AlphaTauri ended only 3 points behind Williams in the end. It was really close, actually, for P7.
Yeah, we can get into this in another episode, but I have questions about that, and I think I think a lot of other teams have questions about that. There's something suspect about that, and I think there needs to be some transparency around it. But
for sure.
But you know, with just going back to Williams real quick, you know, there's Logan Sargeant, resident American in Formula One. He did not have a good season. I think he needs to be concerned that his seat is definitely under threat. And I think Liam Lawson, I don't know what his contract is with Red Bull, but I think that could be a great fit for Liam. But then there's the two other bottom feeders in Alfa.
Hey, maybe for Haas, not for Alfa Romeo.
Yeah. I'll be nicer to Alfa Romeo, but Haas to me, we talked about another situation where relevance is important. Haas to me is just, you know, there's questions swirling about Andretti, whether they deserve a place in Formula One and their competitiveness and this and that. And Haas just continues to me, in my opinion, demonstrate they just don't have what it takes for Formula One. They were, you know, back when we started this podcast, they consistently scored more points season after season after season. and then just took a fucking nosedive. And since then, just I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to say about them. They're a very frustrating team. Nico showed a lot of great like one lap pace this year.
Yeah.
Like he made it into Q3 quite a few times.
Hulkenberg was very strong in race pace. Qualifying pace. Definitely, I was surprised how badly he was beating K-Mag. I just wonder how invested Gene Haas is in the project. I don't understand him, the personality, what he's doing there, because he clearly could be putting more money into this, and I don't understand what his ambitions are. If it's just to be there and have a team, it's hard to be a fan of Haas. Like they don't really give you much to get behind, support them. Even when they go to American races, like, oh yeah, we have an American team, but is it really like we should be more excited about an American team, but we're not, right?
That's the thing. I don't just support them because they're American. Like I can't. Especially after the whole you're all Cali, Russia dust up. Like, yeah, I'm just like, okay, so you guys are just going to bend over and take money from anyone. That's another conversation in Formula One right now that we'll have in another episode.
But and in sports in general, I could say. Yeah.
But I will say, yeah, Haas to me, if there's Alpine, granted, Alpine, their history, huge, huge manufacturer behind them in Renault. I think they can turn it around. Haas, I just genuinely don't know. And, you know, there's conversations about adding new teams to the grid. You know, obviously Andretti has been itching to get into Formula One. And I do wonder if there's a door where there could be some sort of collaboration there. Because
please,
Haas just to me continues to be in a utter disappointment.
I don't think I could say it better than you just did.
All right, honest. There we go. So listen, the 2023 season, Max, Red Bull, Adrian Newey. I think if we look back on this year, that's what everybody's going to remember. Which is interesting because it was such a historic season from that perspective, but I don't because I'm so partial and opinionated on Max just as a personality, it's going to take me some time to really let that sink in, just how dominant he was and how dominant Red Bull was. Just being honest.
Yeah. It also feels good to have this winter break and not hear the Dutch national anthem.
Oh my God.
Weekend after weekend after
it's so
weekend.
Boring. Like it is just a boring national anthem.
Yes.
Sorry to all our Dutch people out there.
We need that Italian national anthem.
That one's great, great. Or like the Marseillaise, like something. Something. Yes. Logan Sargeant, get on the podium.
Yeah.
You know, let's get the has the Star Spangled Banner ever been played on an F1 podium?
For Andretti.
True.
Back in the 70s.
Yeah. Way back when. But no, interesting. I think this season has left a lot of F1 fans wanting more, though.
And yeah, as in terms of racing. One last thing I want to add about the backmarkers. Alfa Romeo, they are also in a transition phase. They have been bought by Audi. So the group Sauber will be kind of rebranding next year because Audi only wants to make it official in 26 with the new regulations, with their new engine. So don't expect much from Alfa Romeo / whatever they're called next year, but to be in that backfield. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. And let's see if they can stick around, Bottas and Joe, for the next project, because a huge constructor is coming in a couple of years. And a lot of drivers are going to want to be in there because it's going to be another works team, which is big for the sport.
Yeah. We didn't really touch on Bottas or Joe, but
Bottas has had his best year off track, I think, ever.
Oh, for sure. He's having a blast.
He's opening F&B businesses all over the place, coffee, gin, I think other food businesses, and having a great time biking and everything. Unfortunately, his team is not giving him much results, but hey, it's good to have him around. He kind of reminds me of Kimi Räikkönen in his last few years of just being there. But I know he can still bring a lot of his experience to Audi project or another team. Who knows what could happen to Bottas?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I wish them the best. Let's just put it that way. That's how I feel about it. But that, for me, concludes the 2023 season. Lots to look forward to, I think, in 2024. But before then, make sure that you follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and wherever podcasts, wherever podcasts are available. And we will see you in 2024 for a little off-season review.